practitioner and a newspaper man. Imagine that.
He likes to look, yeah.
A practitioner and a newspaper man. A practitioner and a newspaper man have much in common, more than we realize. Fred Allen, the humorist, said, "To a newspaper man, a human being is an item with skin wrapped around it. To a practitioner, a human being is just an expression of the law of cause and effect, and it can be changed instantly." Mm. Worth repeating. Mm-hmm. Practitioner and a newspaper man have much in common. Fred Allen, the humorist, said, "To a newspaper man, a human being is an item with skin wrapped around it." Cold, objective, uncaring, just reporting the facts, man, just the facts. To a practitioner, a human being is just an expression of the law of cause and effect, and it can be changed instantly. Now, that's pretty positive, pretty dynamic statement coming from a humorist. And of course, there's really no humor in there. It's all quite serious. A human being is an expression of the law of cause and effect, and it can be changed instantly. Now, this is something that we have been talking about for a long, long time, how all of the relative world is the law of cause and effect at work. We say that the law of cause and effect brings things into being. We say the law of cause and effect manifests all that comes for whatever reason. The law of cause and effect brings forth out of the invisible into the visible the things that we want to see, whether it's wholeness, abundance, relationships, or what have you. Okay. In absolute, where we like to dwell now and then, we realize that all already exists. And realizing that all already exists, nothing new is created or destroyed or changed in any way, then we go back to the law of cause and effect. And for the relative man who doesn't realize that all already exists, he thinks that he is putting a cause in motion, a new cause, to bring forth a new object which has never been thought of or expressed before. And of course, that's so silly, because he is bringing forth a variation on an object. Many musicians write a variation on a theme. Well, the human being is bringing forth a variation on a concept. The concept might be light. All right? We look at light. We say light comes from the sun. How lovely. We close our eyes and we can see scenes. We can, in our sleep, in our dreams, see actual living scenes with people that we recognize or don't recognize. We see the sun, the moon, the stars. We see light bulbs. We see all sorts of sources of light. And yet, that's not there. It's just in our imagination. Or is it? Or are we tuning in to the reality? Not reality. Are we tuning into the storehouse of the infinite allness? And the storehouse of the infinite allness is not the is. The is the concept behind which lies the infinite variability. And so the is a never-changing thing. The variableness is always changing. And it can change, as Mr. Allen said here, instantly. It can change instantly. Now, think about it. I tell you, there's a red armadillo. You say, what's an armadillo? That's an animal that lives in Texas. And it's like an anteater. It has a long snout and it eats ants from the anthills and so forth. It has a very heavy coat of armor around it, so that if somebody comes along and steps on it, it'll roll rather than being crushed. And it just can roll up into a little ball, like a basketball. And so if some animal tries to take it and eat it, it only gets this outer plates of skin, which are like iron. They can't get through it. So, anyhow, back to our red armadillo. Now, there is no such thing as a red armadillo. They are all sand-colored, or they are a grayish-green. And they are not common in the world, but they're common where they are common, wherever they exist, like Texas, and the desert areas, like the Sahara and the Gobi and where have you. In those desert areas, they exist because that is their natural habitat. But they're not red. Even though you right now, in your mind's eye, as I am, you see a red armadillo. You see this red dog-like creature with this heavy plating around it, this with a red coat, because I'm saying it's red. And I'm saying it's red. I'm saying it's red, even though it is not red. I told you it's not red. I told you it's gray, it's sand-colored, a little greenish perhaps, but not red at all. It has no redness to it. Of course, if you cut it open inside and make it bleed, then the blood will be red. But as it's of itself, it is not red. So, now, someone comes up to you and says, oh, I have an armadillo I want to show you. You instantly looked for the red creature because you've got this so ingrained in your mind, stupidly, unimportantly, not with any reality. You knew it was wrong at the time you first heard it. But it's the only thing that you really impressed you. And it impressed you because you're not supposed to be impressed by it. And you're told that you're not supposed to be impressed by it. And so you just take it and you make it yours. Well, this is the reason the law of cause and effect has a difficult time being expressed for whatever you presume its purpose is to be. If the purpose that you have is to see an armadillo, you will not be satisfied until you see a red one. So they have to get out their spray can and paint it red. But why is that? That's because in your mind you have this subjective thought put there erroneously, put there on purpose, put there maliciously, if you will, to make you always think of red armadillos. And whenever you see an armadillo, if it's not red, you're not going to think it's real. Okay. In our consciousness, we say, I return to my original purity and integrity. Of course, we never left there, but we say, I return to my original purity and integrity. Well, now, we know we are not there, because we must return to it. We know that we're on the trip back to it, and maybe it's up ahead of us, not behind us. But we know we're not there, because we're returning to it. We're using words. See, words like return, and I will be, and I will do, and I can, and so forth. These words all indicate limitation. They all indicate that we are not experiencing it right now. And that's tough. That's a tough nut to crack. We put that in our mind. We put it in our thought so much that it has become part and parcel of our thinking. And it's not only part of our thinking in one area, but in all areas. No matter what it is, I say, Sylvia, will you wash the dishes? Yes, I'll get to it in a few minutes. Sylvia doesn't say, yes. Bonk. End. She says, I'll get to it in a few minutes, because she is always thinking in terms of time and space. And when we think in terms of time and space, then we are thinking in limitation. I say, Ingeborg, did you pick up that laundry? And Ingeborg says, yes, I have it in the car. Well, I don't care whether you have it in the car or not. I said, did you pick it up? Well, that's fine. You picked it up. Then that's the answer to my question. You picked it up. But you see, you want to go further. Mm-hmm. And when you go further, you mess yourself up. Because then you put yourself in line with my saying, why did you leave it in the car? Are you some sort of stupid person? You leave the laundry in the car after you bring it up here? Why don't you bring it in the house and put it away like any normal, ordinary person would do? And of course, if you just say, yes, I picked it up, that's the end. But you see, when we keep going further than what is called for, we put ourselves in jeopardy. Now, I don't want to say, what's the matter, stupid? You left it in the car, should have brought it in the house. I don't want to say that. But it's programmed in me to think anyone who would bring the laundry up in the golf cart would not leave it there, they'd bring it in the house. That's for most of us, I think. We think you would not leave it there. But she left it there, and then she mentioned it. She left it there because she knew that wasn't what she should have done. You follow me? Mm-hmm. See, in her consciousness, she's got that hang up. In our consciousness, we have that hang up. And so if we watch ourselves with our words and don't go putting out words that are going to give hang ups, we're doing ourselves a favor. Now, you say, oh, that's so relative. That's so primitive thinking. That's right. Very primitive thinking. And that's the type of thinking that is backing the law of cause and effect. It is the very foundation of the law of cause and effect. If you say, I have a beautiful horse, and you don't have one, but in your mind's eye you have it, in your heart you have it, in your life you have it, it is yours now. I was going to say it will be, say have it. It is yours now. It is yours now because you have it in your consciousness, and you won't have it any more definitely than in your consciousness now. You may go home and there is your horse. You may go home and there is not your horse, but it doesn't matter. It's still in your consciousness. You see, the law of cause and effect depends on just one thing. What cause are we putting in motion for what effect? The teeniest little thought that you can hardly see, like a speck of dust, is just as important as a barrel of water, you know, a barrel of sand or a barrel of dust. It's just as important because it puts the law of cause and effect in motion. Now, I'm whole and perfect, whole and perfect, whole and perfect, whole, you know, jump up and down and shout and scream and say you're whole and perfect, and you don't believe it. Now, if you jump up and down and shout it because you're so joyful that you're whole and perfect, super. If you want to be whole and perfect, well, it's just enunciating the fact that you're not. See, if you do it out of joy of an actuality, because you're whole and perfect, then that's one thing. But if you do it because you want to make it happen, then you're saying to the law, it is not done. It is not so. This is just an illusion. This is just a joke. So we have to be very careful. The teeniest thought, the grandest thought, the most vehement thought, or the gentlest thought, all have exactly the same power. And the power dwells in the fact, do we know it is so, or do we wish it is so? If we know it is so, I know that I know that I know. Do we know that it is so? Then it is so. Do we wish it is so? It will never be so. The moment of knowing has to come there. You wish you had $50. You wish you had $50. You wish you had $50. I hand you $50. You say, thank you. My wish is fulfilled. No, it isn't. Your knowingness was fulfilled. You began to think what you were going to do with that $50. You began recognizing that you were not going to do it. It was already done. I paid my bill, you know. That $50 was important to pay that outstanding bill. Now I got a $50 bill I owe somebody else, but that paid that outstanding bill. And you had it in your mind. Now, you don't have to receive it from somebody like that. You don't have to receive it in a debt form. You can receive it like that, or your bill could be paid off. Your bill could be paid. You go down there and you say, how much do I owe you? I'll write you a check now. Oh, for what? Well, I owe you some money, don't I? Let's see. Ellen Jeremini? No, you don't owe us anything. When's the last time I paid you? Well, you paid me 2 months ago and 3 months and four. Oh, well, I thought, sure, I owed you some money. No, if you'd like to give us some money, we're happy to have it. You know, thank you very much. But no, you don't owe us anything. You see, you don't know. When you leave your mind clear of the debt, leave your mind clear of your obligation, and you say, my obligation is fulfilled, and leave it alone, then when you check on it, it's fulfilled. Now, is that right? That's the way the principle works. But you tell that to a person, they'll say, oh, that's just Pollyanna. That's just a way of escaping responsibility. Well, darn nice way of escaping responsibility, isn't it? Mm-hmm. If we learn to put that cause in motion in that way, because we're not trying to take something from someone, cheat anybody. We're not trying to ignore a responsibility on our part. We're merely recognizing that it is already taken care of. Your body, you say, my arm is whole and perfect. And you say, is whole and perfect. And you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, damn. What's the matter, doctor? Well, your arm's whole and perfect. I was going to get a $2,000 job on that one, you know. And you know, mess them up. Mess up the grocer. Say, I am satisfied. I am satisfied. I eat very little, if any, food. I'm just always satisfied. The poor grocer will go out of business, you know, as well as any other merchant who is serving you. So when you're satisfied, it is yours. It comes to you. It comes to you in ways that you cannot behold. Your imagination hasn't even thought in those directions. So begin to like yourself. A practitioner and a newspaper man have much in common. Fred Allen said, a human being to a newspaper man is an item, just a news item, with skin wrapped around it. To a practitioner, a human being is an expression of the law of cause and effect, and the law of cause and effect can be changed instantly. Now, his presumption here is the human being can be changed instantly, but the human being can never be changed. The human being will always be what it is, good, bad, or indifferent. When you put a new cause in motion, you're putting a new human being in motion. Whatever is past, and this is the new human. This is the new effect. This is the new experience out of a new cause. And even that is an old experience, because it's always been, always will be. And it's kind of wonderful. Mm. So, my beloveds, have a lovely day. And I love you very much, and I see each of you putting causes in motion for instant responses. I love you.